The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast, and I got to tell you how thrilled I am. I mean, this is kind of why I wanted to do this podcast, because it's not just wine people, it's people that are even somehow connected to the world.
I hope
of wine.
You don't mind that I'm driving my truck around while we talk.
This is Sean Collin, comedian Sean Collin, and Hello. We're doing this at 1311 St. Clair Avenue West.
Yes.
We're outside, so that's a truck, but I really appreciate you doing this. This is why I wanted this podcast, talk to neat people who had some sort of connection with wine, and you do.
I have an oblique connection with wine. A few years ago, I did a thing called a Wine Align testing. What was it called?
So You Think You Know Wine.
So You Think You Know Wine. And we had a bunch of sommeliers,
yep.
And they all were given wines to taste. We did several rounds of this. I think it was four or five rounds. And they generally got it wrong a lot of the time.
They were quite
amazingly wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of the way. They were always confused by, oh, it's a blend. You got me. It's a blend. Well, surely you should know if it's a blend.
Now, I will say this, because I got to defend all of them, because
yes.
I've done those wine tastings. Those blind tastings, they're hard.
Right.
They are not easy. And yeah, and it would always amaze me when someone like John Szabo, who's like one of the masters, or Jenner Huther, another one of the masters, whenever they got it wrong, I'm like, damn, if they're getting it wrong, how would I do? But there were some tough ones. Pinotage is not a wine you don't normally try.
Right.
The Creekside Sauvignon Blanc, that would be a tough one as well. So there was a couple tricky ones.
So it's not wine tasting for dum-dums.
No, they were given some hard stuff.
Like this is a red wine.
Yeah,
that's all you for stupid people. That's all you need to know.
I love. There was one time. I think the first one you poured it and go, this is a white wine, and that was your note. So I've transcribed. I have a lot of notes here that I want to get into. Yeah. First, how about this? How much did you learn about wine from the first time, like from before you did it to afterwards? Do you feel like you learned anything about
wine?
Well,
I think I learned a great deal more than I knew before. I understand wines have different varieties and varietal flavors and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to describe wine is also something that I never really understood until I hung around with these people in this program, where they just talk about the nose and
the aromatics
and the fruit content and that sort of thing. So
did you take any terms from them, and have you ever had any of their expressions, did you steal, and have you used them with your friends?
Woody notes.
Yeah.
Woody notes is something. You can oak. It tastes oak in this.
Mm-hmm.
And pepper.
Yep.
There's some pepper in
there. Pepper's good. If it's Syrah, you say pepper. You're always going to be right.
Right, because it's peppery. But they don't use real pepper in it.
No.
No, it's just the quality of the grape.
They also cat pee is a term, or mushroom, or earthiness, or barnyard. I think
Do people really like cat pee to drink?
You know, it
is that a bad thing?
It depends the year. Like 2016, the cat pee was just delicious. It was so good.
Well, the cats were happy that year.
Yeah, it was a good year for the cats.
Yeah.
How did all the people, like all these wine people, how do they react to you? Because what I loved is, and the part of this podcast is sometimes to take the piss out of wine.
Yeah.
Going back to cat pee for a second. And you made fun of that world, but I thought you did it in this really funny, you didn't do it in this mean way. You did it, I thought, in this really funny sort of way to help humanize wine. How did they all feel about you?
Well, I think they had a really good time. I think they're immediately, I think for all that I am worried that I don't know about wine, they are worried that they're not funny. You know.
Oh no! Oh, do they? How often?
So, like, they're not. That's just my view of like being in a situation like that. They're trying to be funny. I'm trying to not look like a dope about wine. So somewhere in the middle is where the sweet spot is. And also, you like to kind of push people a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the point where they're a little uncomfortable, because that's what's funny, you know, and making fun of them for being wrong.
Yeah.
is kind of fun.
It was
because
funny.
No one does that blatantly to them in any other way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I imagine if they're at a wine tasting somewhere and they get something wrong, they're rarely in a position where someone's going, "What is this? You're wrong." You know, and usually they're very coddled and, yeah, you know, "We all want to hear what you have to say about this beautiful wine." And they but this one was like, "This is a ganache. It's not a, you know, you're wrong."
Yeah.
It's not even close.
Well, there is, and it's amazing because you'll see this even at that level. There is an insecurity. And a lot of the people you had, these are some of the best in the world, like John Szabo and Huether and Sarah D'Amato and some of these people. And Veronica Rive,
yeah,
like I worship on some level. It's sad, but I worship these people.
It is sad.
I know because I know the work involved and their level of knowledge. But it's funny. Like, could you sense that the insecurity even with them? And they're with you, but I bet there was that insecurity.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of people just take their opinion for granted. Like they could come in and say whatever, and usually, like in their milieu, they're exalted by everyone.
Yeah.
And so to have someone in them come into that environment with me and have me go, "You don't know what you're talking about."
No.
There is, I think that, you know, for all I do, I've done comedy for like 30 years, there's still that insecurity that like someone's just going to suddenly say, "You, sir, are not funny at all."
Yeah.
And, you know, all right, I guess that's a valid opinion, but, you know, I'm sure that if you're an expert at anything, you're just worried that one day someone's just going to go, you know, like that scene in Princess Bride where she goes, the witch yells at, "Liar!
Liar! Liar! Yes.
Liar!"
Yeah.
And that, yeah, what? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm sure that they have that insecurity for sure.
All right. I want to bounce around. I want a little bit about you, Sean Cullen. Because you just mentioned insecurity. You, of course, for people who don't know, you for ages were with Corky and the Juice Pigs.
Yep.
A really famous improv troupe, like just, you know, incredibly famous group. If you were at all involved in the theater comedy world, or even just like theater or comedy in the, you know, late 80s and 90s,
well,
you heard of
nice.
You guys.
Yes.
How different was that in terms of for insecurity between that versus stand-up comedy?
It's very different.
Yeah, because stand-up, you're all on your own up there.
Well, the thing is, first, when we started... We started off doing amateur nights at Yuck Yucks, but we were already too polished to be on amateur nights, and we jumped right to getting paid gigs, because we're all actors, so we had all been trained to be on stage and not be nervous about that aspect of the thing, of the business. And I think the real one thing that takes forever for stand-up comics is to feel comfortable in their own skin on stage.
Yep.
And to learn your voice, what your voice is going to be. And it takes, you watch somebody on open mics just stink for years, and then suddenly they get it. Like, this is the kind of material I'm supposed to be doing. This is the way I'm supposed to present it. And it all comes together, and they're great.
Yeah.
And we did that. We were able to power through that kind of insecurity. But then when I started doing solo stuff, for the first part of it, I started doing character stuff, which was kind of an intermediate step, and you can keep a layer between you and the audience.
Yeah, it's a bit of a crutch. You can hide behind the character if the writing wasn't, if you didn't think, if you were insecure with the writing or something.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did this character called Dame Sybil Thorndyke, who was an ancient English actress who would tell horrible anecdotes about, like, just horrific violence about dealing with, you know, going out with Oliver Reed and hiring a sniper to shoot him during the middle of his monologue on stage. Just weird, stupid, dumb things. Yeah. But it was fun. And then it is really just, it does take time to kind of get to a place where you're feeling comfortable and confident. And I think acting training helped me that way.
Yeah.
You know, when you see my act, you think I'm super confident. Like, I have this kind of almost bombastic kind of way of presenting myself, I think, in a lot of the ways. And I'm not really like that at all. You know, I'm quite understated for the most part. But
when you get on stage, it's different.
It is. So you have a persona that you live in.
Yeah.
And it all works out for you that way. So
I found my insecurity when I did stand up was I would go too fast.
Oh yeah.
So I'd be worried about, because if they don't laugh, then I'm going to look stupid. So I'll just keep going. So I would tell a joke, even a good joke, and the laughing would be coming. And then I would just
go right to the next
just
one.
Just go to the next joke.
Step all over your joke.
Yeah.
That's not great.
No, it's not.
Well, it is just a matter of comfort and just being able to, you know, it's like a baseball swing. You know, you can swing too fast and swing ahead of the and you can swing behind. It's just getting that sweet spot and just, you know, not rushing anything. It's a fun job if you can do it well. I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah,
but you do that in your radio persona.
There is.
Well.
Oh no, like,
but you do talk very fast as well.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I do. it'll always be my number one. Like, if I was going to do the things you should work on. And unfortunately, I've been trying to work on that since my early 20s, so I don't know what that
says. Really? How about you're still working?
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, my theater training and improv training, it helps so much for radio.
Oh, for sure.
It helps. It's
just to know how to maintain an arc and to go like, bring this out. If somebody's doing an interview, have a shape to it.
Yeah.
You know, shaping the segments. It's important.
How much were you aghast by all the spitting that went on during the videos?
Well, it was quite, it's really something so high class is drinking wine.
Yeah.
And then people just horking into a glass is kind of creepy, you know, a bucket. And just think it's so disrespectful to the wine and to the work of the wine masters.
Mm-hmm.
And then just that kind of awful.
The sound effects when they're sucking it in. And by the way, as much as I make fun of them throughout this interview, I have to say, every word they've used, I've said. I have my own technique for ingesting the wine and spitting it and all of that as well. But yeah, it was that must have been weird to see.
Well, it's got its what do you call it? Its moves. It's got its nomenclature and it's got its actions that are associated with it. It's a strange. It's ancient. So, like, people have been making wine how long? 10,000 years?
Yeah.
Probably not. Maybe not that long. But
it's thousands of years. Like, there's evidence of it from.
So, there must have been pretentious a-holes sipping and spitting, even in ancient Sumeria, you know?
Yeah.
So, this has got a long history.
It really does. But what I always teach people, if they want to be a wine expert, you know, the first thing you have to do is you have to learn how to swirl. And then ABS, always be swirling. Like just because if you swirl your glass, you just look like an expert, even without opening your mouth. That's my first piece of advice to
Absolutely.
Anyone.
Absolutely. You just swirl it, and especially if you can hold the stem between your middle finger and your ring finger, you look like a real a-hole.
You do. It's important.
Yes.
It's so
You're
important.
You're checking out the legs.
Yeah.
The legs.
Another one is smell the wine without taking a sip because you're so interested. You don't want the booze in your belly. You just want to smell the aromatic varietals.
Oh, that's right. The aromatic varietals.
One of the terms that you coined as
wild
Ponzi.
Flowers. Ponzi.
Yeah,
it is a Ponzi
situation.
They use a lot of Ponzi terms.
But they're right, though.
Yeah,
they like are. When you smell them.
There's a reason things become cliched.
Yeah.
It's because that works. Everyone knows what you're talking about.
How much did you spit?
Spend?
No, spit. Did you spit at all?
I think I just drank the wine.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of that whole, we shot all of them in one afternoon, and I was pretty drunk by the end, and I enjoyed it. But I did appreciate the flavors of the wines. Once they explained them to me, I knew it. I enjoyed it myself.
I loved your intros every time. You just tried to find a new way to say, and you would just bellow out. So you think you know wine? And just, you would play with that, so many different characters for that.
So you think you know wine?
Yeah.
Yes, I do enjoy being an ass.
It was, but it was great. Because like, even when they would say, this wine is from a cool place, but in a warm country, when they were talking about the Australian Chardonnay.
Right.
Like, to me, in the studying I've done, like, that makes sense. But for someone who, you know, isn't part of that world, you'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Cool place in a warm country. So that's like Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
They would say the Victoria region of wine.
Yeah. Yeah, Victoria region or just areas that were high up, like high
the
altitude.
But there's not a lot of mountains in Australia. There's only the Billabongs or the Billabongs? There's just like, it's not a great number of mountains. Maybe Tasmania, but it has no wine, does it?
Tasmania. Here is, I wish, I'll admit this. the douchiest lines I've ever said, and you can rank this on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm not a big fan of Australian red wine,
right?
But I've said this sentence. I'm not proud of it. I've said I don't really like Australian red unless it's Tasmanian Pinot.
Wow.
Yeah.
You are a wanker. Tasmanian Pinot.
It's really good. It's really good. Pinot Noir from Tasmania is really good. But yeah, that was pretty Ponzi by me.
Do they really brew? Do they really distill? Do they really, what do you call it?
Make wine.
Make wine.
Yes, grow the grapes, make
the wine. Do they vint a lot of wine in...
Oh, they vent. They vent all right.
I just was in... I did this show called The Nations, and it was a web series, and what one friend of mine from New Zealand came is a comic named Jared Christmas, of all names. Mm-hmm. And he and I went across the country in Canada doing things like whitewater rafting and doing exciting things that Canadians can do. Then we went to New Zealand and we went on a tour of New Zealand doing things, going to the, you know.
The caves, like spelunking in the caves.
Yeah,
the,
it was amazing.
The glowworms and North Island.
But we went to Marlborough Estates Winery, which was tremendous. Like when they gave us all these beautiful flights of wine, and it was just tremendous. But I've forgotten about this. The other great wine experience I've had is on the there's volcanic islands in Auckland Bay.
Mm-hmm. Waiheke Island?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I went to the estate there. There was a vineyard there, and we had dinner there on the side of this volcanic mountain. And had the most beautiful wine. I was so young and stupid that I don't remember any of it.
Yeah.
But the wines in, you don't like the red wines.
Oh, no, in Australia. I'm not, New Zealand, I love it. And if I was going to be Ponzi again, I'd probably say I was shocked about how good the Bordeaux blends were in Waiheke Island.
Yeah, that's Ponzi?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a Ponzi line.
Well, there's that great Monty Python sketch about Australian table wines. Have you ever heard that?
No, how do I not know that?
It's right on to our explanation of great Australian table wines. This is something Jehulahong. This wine is not a wine for drinking. It is a wine for laying down and avoiding. Six barrels of this and you're really finished. It's a very short little bit about Australian wine reviews. Very good.
And see, back then, probably Australian wine wasn't as respected as it is now, because that would have been like probably the early 70s when they did
well,
that.
Well, is it more robust than the average
wine?
Yeah,
well, it's just big. It's a big, not fruit bomb, but it's very fruit-centric, big, a lot of eucalyptus or mint, and a lot of their Shirazes and Cabernets. And as I'm saying this, I now feel like I'm in the wine line videos, but there's a lot of that. It just doesn't work for my palate. I'm just not a big fan.
So where did their vines come from originally?
Well, God. I mean, they probably took a lot of cuttings from France. Yeah. Yeah. Probably, a lot of stuff would have come from France.
I heard this, that there was a, in the 1800s in France, there was a blight.
Yeah, phloxera.
Yeah, and they had to take cuttings from New World wines, mm-hmm. New World
grafted
vines, and graft them onto the old world. And they say it's not been the same since.
Well, it did change it. But, I mean, you know, French wine since 1900 has been pretty delicious.
It has.
But it just, it was a huge, for a couple decades. I mean, it was a catastrophe. Like, it was an absolute disaster.
So where does Blue Nun stand in the world of wine?
Blue Nun is important. Like, Blue Nun, Yellowtail, Fusion, all these wines are important.
Black Tower?
Black Tower, yes. These are important wines because these are the wines you got drunk on when you were 17.
Sure.
And eventually you then, you
graduate.
Know, it's your stepping stone.
It's the gateway wine.
Yeah. Like most men, you drink 90% red, maybe a little bit of white. It's mostly New World. You don't like French wine. And then eventually as you get older, you start drinking less California and you start drinking more European wine. That's usually just how it works.
It's like classical music and jazz. You don't like jazz at all when you're a kid.
Yes.
And then you kind of start going, hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
I kind of like this song.
Yeah.
And then eventually you're like listening to weird Coltrane bootlegs.
That's a perfect way of putting it. Absolutely. I never listen. I never put the jazz station on at home.
No.
Now I put the jazz station on all the time.
It's frightening.
Yes. As I'm sitting and debating this Moselle Riesling versus the one from Eden Valley.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, that would be fun. Actually, to me, that would be a perfectly delightful
day. Wonderful
way.
Day.
That would be. All right, because again, I want to bounce back and forth. How important is booze, not just necessarily wine, to stand-up comedy?
Well, I mean, it's hard to not drink and be in the business.
I'm talking about both the comedian side and the audience side.
It's nice to have the audience. It's relaxed.
Yeah.
When they have a drink and they're a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more uninhibited, that's when you probably have the better shows. But it's a fine line between having a couple beers and being totally hammered.
Yeah.
And then you just think, I am the show. It's just that kind. Like I did a late night show at the Comedy Bar the other night. And it was a birthday party of 17 people came in to do. And that's just a late night stand up, one after the other sort of deal. And I was first and I come on and this woman, like I would go, Spider-Man is interesting. And she would say, yeah, I saw that movie.
Oh, no.
And I said, okay.
Good.
Well, I have an observation about it, if you'd let me talk. And then, I'm from Dubai. And I was like, okay, but that has nothing to do with Spider-Man, but thank you. And, it ended up me just talking to her.
Yeah.
But that kind of is that the worst end of the alcohol spectrum. But I find I can't really drink and do shows anymore.
Yeah.
I have to be focused and, drink is a depressant, really, and it makes you kind of heavy. And yep. I just like to be quick of nimble of mind when I'm dealing with people.
I remember only once that I drank. I think it was at the Unicorn.
Oh. Oh, is that the
at
old...
Eglinton. Yeah, at Eglinton.
Eglinton. Green Alligators people?
Yeah.
What were their names? The Irish Rovers Bar? One of them. There were two.
Yeah.
The Irish Rover and the... Anyway, it's not important.
I had one of my best nights there because there was four people in the audience.
Oh.
And I made the bartender laugh. I made the waiters laugh, and Sean Majunder was there.
Oh, good.
And he was laughing afterwards. He's like, hey, Matt, come on over. And I'm like a 21-year-old ball of insecurity. So the fact that he came over and said and was talking about my bit, I'm like
that was the greatest night of your life.
That was 23 years ago, and I still remember it.
Well, that's good. But he made a nice impression.
The Al Capone's, I remember I had a couple drinks, and then I get up there and I start riffing about my new routine, and then I realize I don't have a new routine, and now I've got to try to find a way to transition from I'm just talking, and now I've got to go, there's no joke, there's no punchline. How do I go from here back to some material?
It's a dangerous road,
yeah.
The drink.
So what's worse, the aggressive heckler or the one you just described, sort of the drunken narcissist who feels they should be part of the show?
Well, I think that's probably worse because the drunken narcissist, because they will not stop.
Yeah.
They just have no self-awareness. Like the angry, they're never angry. They're just, they're angry. I'm sure they can be angry. But at least you can just... You don't feel bad about saying, and shut your effing mouth.
Yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
And everyone will go, yay for him, he said it.
Mm-hmm.
And but with the narcissist, you just look like you're being mean to them.
Yeah.
Because they're just nice and talking.
Right.
And then, like, with that woman, she was there with all her friends. I couldn't say, could you please shut up?
Yeah.
Because... then I was being mean to their friend.
And then the entire audience is against you.
Going to shift.
Yeah.
And that's just a bad way to be. It's a bad place to be in. So, what can you say?
And then the other subset I hate is when you go to Second City and, okay, someone give me a place. Sex place or gynecologist. It's like always.
Proctologist.
Yeah.
That's a funny one.
Yeah, it's just the worst. But, improv in its own way is kind of weird that way. It invites horror.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, it's always sex. It's always like sex shop.
Yeah.
Or porn film. Give us this film, porn film.
Porn film.
Give us a shop, sex shop.
Yeah.
Give us a geographical location,
sex shop.
Town. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. My only time being a jerk, and I shouldn't have done this because... I know what they're going through. Give me a title, and I just bellowed out, "A bird in your hand makes blowing your nose difficult."
Oh.
And they all paused for a second. They looked at me, and they're just like, F you. And then
you have to do it. They have to do it.
And then you have to do it.
Wow.
Did you have a favorite of all the tasters?
That's a long time ago now.
If you don't remember, that's fine. Because remember, I said this before. I rewatched.
Refreshed.
I rewatched every one of them.
Oh,
I think my favorite was how hard it was for you to say Bill. And now I can't. From the Montreal Gazette.
Bill's the, was it Memo Gibbon?
Yeah, from, wearing the toque. I should know it. You know, I follow him on Twitter, right. Bill Zakakrau, or...
Yeah, but it's not your strong suit.
It's not my strong suit.
For a man in the media, you cannot pronounce names.
Yeah.
That's your kryptonite.
Yeah, that is.
He was nice. I liked him.
Yeah.
There was the lady...
Jennifer Huther and Veronica, or Sarah D'Amato. Those are the women.
Who's the dark-haired? Sarah D'Amato?
Sarah D'Amato, yeah, had red hair.
Red hair. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I liked her. She was fun. They were all really nice to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have been snooty. The thing is, they could have been like... When you're an expert at something, truly an expert, you can retreat into your expertise and alienate the one in the room who's not one of you.
Yeah.
And they never did that. They were all very kind, and they let me make fun of them a little bit.
Yeah.
And because I think they actually enjoyed it. Because I think when they, in their job, they're either under a great deal of pressure to be right.
Yeah.
And to be taken seriously, and also the other thing is people are so enamored of them, in awe of them, that when someone just goes, "You're not all that," that's just, let's just have a little fun, and I think they really enjoyed and appreciated that.
You know what that reminds me of, except for this group didn't appreciate when it happened. I remember hearing this story from Adam Carolla where he was talking about when Jimmy Kimmel used to do Fox Sports, when he would do the NFL pregame show.
Oh, yeah.
And he would do his bits and he would be making fun of like Howie Long. And for a guy like Howie Long, here's a good looking big dude who's been nothing
what
successful.
What does he need to worry about?
But he's never had the nerd. The nerds have never insulted him. So when Jimmy Kimmel... The nerd, you know, was making, and this was before Kimmel became a huge star. He was, you know, big, but nowhere near. Like, some of the athletes didn't know how to react to it. So good on the Psalms for being able to to have fun with it.
Well, that's the thing about sports, is they take itself so seriously. In America, especially.
Yeah.
Like, and in hockey as well, you can't, their idea of a great sense of humor is, he put shaving cream in my skates.
Yeah.
That's the height of hilarity. But you can't, like, there are so many shows in Britain that are panel shows that are like, They Think It's All Over was a great one where it was Gary Lineker, who was one of the greatest soccer players of all time. He was the head of one team, and then there was the other team was a cricketer. And they would just make fun of sports.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really funny.
Really?
And they had a show called The Footy Show in Australia. It was all about Australian rules football. And what was funny about it that week. And you could never do that in America.
Could you imagine Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, and Mike Babcock doing a hockey show, making fun of it all, making fun of all the cliches and everything?
Wouldn't it be amazing,
though? Oh, my God.
Like, if you could get Brendan Shanahan alone and talk to him, he's a funny guy. I can think from what I've known about him and heard about him, he's a funny guy, but now he has to be the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs and never... crack a smile again.
By the way, someone right now is yelling, he's the president. Kyle Dubas is the general manager.
Well, you know that.
I mean, this is just how serious people take sports.
Yeah, you know? Well, I'm a dummy because I didn't know that. But the thing is, I don't know. It's just that I wish you could have room for humor and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But people just don't like what, you know, Norm MacDonald had his own comedy show about sports.
Yep.
People just hated it.
He hosted the ESPYs the first year.
And they hated it.
It is some of the best stuff for the reaction because, again, these athletes are confused. Why is the nerdy, you know, theater guy making a joke about me? I just won the Super Bowl. And they've no way to handle that.
No, they don't. Well, sports is full of nerds, though. I mean, everyone who's an analyst is a nerd. They're just nerds about sports, you know? It's just the same thing as being nerd about science.
I compare, and we will get back to wine, because I got a lot more wine stuff. But
all right.
I compare, and I've done this bit on air before, that there's no difference between a Trekkie and an NFL fan on Sunday. They both dress up. They both put on makeup. They both ask for autographs. They wait in line a lot of times. And they usually mill about in a open space with other like-minded people for large pieces of time before the cast from Star Trek talks or from when the Raiders are taking on the Broncos. There's
right.
not much difference, really, between the Trekkies and the football
Absolutely
people.
True. But I don't know. I've always, you know, I have a, well, I don't know if it's appropriate, but I have a very funny story about Brendan Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes me laugh. It might not be right for your wine,
that's
wine
okay.
group.
We're here now.
But I was went down with a group of friends to see the Detroit Red Wings playing. I think they're playing New York Rangers. And we got one tickets, went down on the train to Joe Louis Arena. And I was really sick. I was like, my bowels were in an uproar.
Yeah.
Terrible. And it was crippling and painful. And so we get there, and I'm just like, I'm really in bad shape, mm-hmm. but I won't want to miss the game.
Yeah.
And my friend knew the Hollands, what's his name? It's Holland.
Ken Holland.
Ken
the
Holland's
manager
daughters.
Of, oh, Ken Holland's daughters. Ken Holland, by the way, for the listeners, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings.
So he knew him, and he said, oh, you come on down to the wives' room after the game. And I'm like, okay, we go down. One of my friends is the biggest Brendan Shanahan fan. Loves the Red Wings. So there's two rooms, and I am just having the worst gas, and it's horrific. Horrific to be around me.
Yeah.
And so there are two rooms. All the wives are in one room, and there's another room that's all no one's in. So I say, I'm going over there.
Yeah.
Smart. I'm just going away.
Yeah.
I'm hiding in this moment. So I go and hide there, and my friend comes over and says, what are you doing? And I'm just like, I am really suffering, and my gas is horrible, and I'm trying to keep it away from everyone. And I'm sitting in a cloud of stink. In comes Brendan Shanahan, walks directly over, and says, hey, guys, how are you doing? Did you see the game? Oh, my God! And he puts his hand over his mouth and runs out of the room like a little boy.
It's a hockey player. He's experienced the worst smells on planet Earth, and you got him out of a room.
Oh, my God. What is that? And he ran away. And now that's the man who's in charge of the future
mm-hmm.
of the Maple Leafs. Toronto Maple Leafs. So let's get back to wine.
And by the way, that gassy smell, that would remind me of an Australian Riesling. Like the petrol, and there would absolutely. You could
methane.
Yeah, you could absolutely draw a line there. So as the series went on, it was the contest, and then it became the playoffs, and then you had the final round to decide who was going to be the winner. I think there was about 9 or 10 contestants and got whittled down to the winner. Could you see a difference or feel a difference in the people from round one when you had like the Creekside Pinot Grigio from Creekside versus at the end? Like, could you tell a difference? Was there more tension or pressure
for the sommeliers?
Yeah, for the tasters.
Well, the thing is,
were they less jokey and around as they would be?
Well, they really are. They're competitive people, and they wanted to win. So when as it went on, they did start to, get serious about it. And when you get, I think at first they're like, oh, this is fun, this is a good time. And then when it gets down to the last round, they go like, oh, there is something to win here, and I want to win it.
Yeah.
So, there was a difference. And I think you really started to see how good they were at their craft, They started to really concentrate.
Woodsy aromas started coming.
Woodsy aromas just
started
like
coming out.
Woodland.
And I know if you don't remember any of this, this is fine. You don't have to.
It's a long time ago for me.
I know it was, and for me it was 12 hours. How many people got your Bane impersonation?
Oh, I don't know at that point. I love Bane. And it's a very, it's one of those voices that's really easy to do, but extremely satisfying.
Yeah.
So it's like Christopher Walken. Almost anyone can do it.
Yeah.
That's why everyone does it.
Yeah.
But Bane, this is a delicious sir. I love the woodland smells of this wine. Yeah.
I didn't see wine until
I was 12 years old. I never saw the sun. Yeah. Well, they I think they appreciated it.
Yeah.
I think someone got it. But I don't know. Sometimes I just like to laugh at the things that make me laugh alone.
The funniest part, though, was your nickname, and you brought it up in a couple episodes, was Amber Rim. When you that's what they called me in high school, Amber Rim.
That's right. I think they were a bit repulsed by that. But just imagining Amber Rim.
Yeah.
It's an old, it's a part that's actually become a part of my act, and I do a bit now called it's basically that I wish I had a nickname in high school and I never had one. So I ask the audience to give me nicknames and I tell them why I had the nickname.
That's a great bit.
It's really creepy, usually creepy reasons why.
That or Juicy Jam. That was another one of
Juicy Jam.
That was another one of your nicknames from
That's what they called me in high school.
Did you like wine more after?
Absolutely. I've always liked wine. I enjoy wine. But I never really would have gone, oh, someone's going to hit that girl. Anyway, I'm sorry. It was just this man was backing up and a woman was walking between the cars. I was terrified.
Again, we are in St. Clair. And moments ago, there was two bikes that they sort of hit each other right next to
us. I thought there
was
going to be an accident.
Yeah, there was right in front of us as well.
What was the topic? Yeah, I think I appreciated wine a little more.
Yeah.
Certainly. I'm a beer guy. And beer has become another wanky pursuit.
Oh, yeah. The whole wine thing. Now it's in everyone's got their own little brew pub, and there's 4,000 different types of, specialty beer. And, it's going the way of wine.
Well, sure, because it's just the same thing. It's just fermenting hops, you know, fermenting yeast. And it's exactly the same, but it's just so... Wine is just so fascinating because it's basically a very simple thing that can be done simply, but the varieties that you can get from all the different types of grape and the way it's stored and everything like that, it's just fascinating. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Roman history, and they talk a lot about wine, and they enjoyed wine even back then. Pompeii was a great wine center. That down along the coast there, I don't know if it still is, like the Amalfi Coast, and there's no wine there.
Not
is
really.
There?
They got to go a little bit more into the interior. I mean, I'm sure there is some that's made from more local varietals that we wouldn't get here. But yeah, a little more central is where.
Yeah, they used to drink it from terracotta to kind of suck the tannins out of the wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And booze, like, I didn't know, like, in the First World War, that the Germans were, like, both sides were just drunk. Now, it wouldn't be wine, but, like, the German soldiers were just fed peach schnapps because it'd be, like, 19-year-olds in the trenches. And then on the British side, it would be, whatever hard liquor they had. And, like, you don't even think about it, but it's just a lot of, like, 20-year-olds that were drunk shooting at each other.
Well, that sounds like a recipe for a good long fight.
Yeah. God, I don't know how we got dark here. All right, we'll wrap it up with this. And by the way, also, I want you to promote what you're up to. Like, what's coming up?
Okay.
Where can people find you? I mean, I remember the first time I saw you, it was just for laughs. This was like early 2000s. And
true.
You had a bit with your child walking on the ceiling and its head spinning. And I don't remember what it was, but this bit, and you really painted this really funny story. I remember I was with the producer of Off the Record at the time.
Oh, I remember what it is.
Killing ourselves.
It's babies. My child... Oh, I was talking about baby groups where you go to talk to other parents and their babies, and they all have like, oh, my baby is so musical, and my baby is doing this, my baby can count, and I was like, well, my baby is hovering in the air and vomiting liquid mercury into my face. Does anyone have that? Is anybody baby like that? Yeah, that was a while ago. But what were we talking about?
My last wine question. But before I get to the last wine question, just where can people find you?
Oh,
where can
people look I'll be doing Just for Last 42 this year. I'm not sure what the venues are yet, but I'm sure all the American acts will be in the big venues, and we'll be in the smaller ones. Just happy to be there. But
I have bought tickets for John Mulaney.
Yeah, well, he's amazing. So why not? Yeah, I'm doing that just for laughs. You can see my podcast, The Sean Pod, on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are sold or pushed. What else am I doing? I'm doing a show. I don't know when you're going to put this up.
It'll be about like 3 weeks from now.
Okay, then never mind.
Never mind.
No, I'm working on a new novel. I'm a science fiction nerd, and I thought it was time I started writing a science fiction / fantasy epic, so I'm working on that now. Yeah, just doing a lot of little things.
Yeah. And so after you did it, or like even now, how would you describe that world of wine, which is a world that, I'm in all the time. But just because I liked it because, like, here's an outsider getting to peek behind the curtain all the terms and the swirling and the spitting and the just the eccentric nature of it, the douchey nature, the impressive nature, like just all the different parts. You got to see the dark underbelly and the glory as well.
Well, I have to say, you know, the first impression you get when you just kind of tangentially brush up against the wine world is what a pretentious, ridiculous thing it is. But it's just like anything, you know, as you penetrate it more deeply, hello, you find that it's got a lot of substance. I mean, it's knowledge is always... What's impressive to me is how much people know about the world through wine. You know, how much you know about the places the wine comes from and the way it's cultivated and all of that. And it's an incredible skill to be able to discern what wine you're drinking and what it means and what it entails. So I thought this is a pretentious sort of thing, but the people, we had a really good time doing Wine Align, and it was really fun. So you think you know wine. I always reminds me of So You Think You Can Dance,
yeah,
which I think would... So You Think You Know Wine is probably less compelling visually.
For me, it's not. I'm such a nerd. I was watching, like, oh, what are they going to call? What are they going to... I'm like, oh, Grenache. Yes, yes. Cote d'Rhône. Yep, they got the blend.
Nice. So did they show the wine underneath?
Yeah, and they put and a font guessing up with all of it, with, like, the points that they were getting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's very satisfying. It's like it's kind of a nerd. Wine nerds would be... What would be a game show that's similar like that?
There really isn't one. I wish there was more of what you guys did. I remember proposing it to one of the Bruce Wallner's, one of the Master Somms, about, you know, doing something similar to Wine Align, because people love wine, but people are intimidated by wine. So when you did it for that season, you learned a lot about wine, but it felt less intimidating because of your presence. Just, you know.
Well, I was learning as I went too.
And they were laughing at you, and you were laughing at them. And I thought that, like, I think there's a place for that, another version of that out there.
Well, it's just like anything. It's like, I kind of liken that situation to, like, advertising. You know, you hire funny people to write funny ad for your product.
Yeah.
And then when you see the funny ad, you go, oh, are people going to laugh at my product and not take it seriously? Can we just tone down the funny on it till you get every ad that's on TV and radio?
Yeah.
Not funny.
Yeah.
So that's what I feel like. Wine is probably takes itself pretty seriously, the world of wine. If it loosened up a little bit and could laugh at itself a little bit, it would be less intimidating.
Yes.
And you'd engage a lot more people in wine drinking who would be willing to watch a show like that and then go out and try those wines.
Yeah.
Because they've seen them and they have some knowledge and they've been educated a bit about them, you know? Mm-hmm.
Sean, really appreciate you taking time to do this.
I hope it was worthwhile.
It was. It was worth the drive here.
Oh.
It was worth the Davenport, all the streets.
It was a dream come true.
Thank
you so much. Yeah. It's lovely to see you again.
Yeah, always great to see you. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Yes, I do talk fast. Remember, you can find this on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Audio Boom, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.